Hello, one and all, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report with me, John Arola. And despite the fact that it's a Friday, and you think you know how I'm gonna end this sentence, it's Brett, right? No, Brett was on Wednesday. Didn't you watch? Didn't you listen? Which means we had to mix it up. But we still do need four hands to take out the trash on a Friday. And so we've got two very capable ones joining us. Adrian Lawrence joins the Damage Report on a Friday. Adrian, welcome back.
Hello, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Great to have you here. We always enjoy talking with you here on the Damage Report and enjoying your content wherever it comes. Co-host every Tuesday, basically on Indisputable, right? Rebel HQ. You do stuff for the main show, everything. And so, thank you for coming back to the Damage Report.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here, and all the rest of yous out there. Thank you for being here as well and staying in, engaged with the news. We got a lot to talk about. We're gonna be following up with the insanity in the hearings for Ketanji Brown Jackson to join the SCOTUS. That's gonna be something. We've got updates out of Ukraine. Joe Manchin still being horrible, but giving us a little bit of hope, which I asked him not to. So we're gonna be debating that. And then we've got people freaking out on airlines and Ginny Thomas. And then we will be doing what we have to do, our one big chore each week. Throwing away our garbage people. And so we're gonna be filling up Trashy here with some prime quality trash. And there is still time, by the way, if you're out there in the community and you wanna choose the community garbage person of the week, you can go to the community tab on our YouTube channel and vote. Countless tens of thousands of you already have. So cast your vote and we'll be revealing that to close out the show. Along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would help us out. And with all that said, Adrian, are you ready to talk about some news?
I am ready. Let's get this.
Okay, let's do it. Apologies in advance for the content here, but we're gonna jump right into this first video and do a little bit of discussion.
But don't worry, my sister. Don't worry. God has got you.
Do we make that up? Do we create that in some? No, that actually happened in the United States. Service, service, service. That's what we call hard edge striving now. It's service.
If you can watch that clip and come out of it not thinking that Tucker Carlson is a full on sociopath, I don't know what conversation about politics or culture or society or anything we can have. His laugh gives it away every time. It is faker than a smile on the face of Mark Zuckerberg. But anyway, he does have a point he wants to make. It's a horrible point. It's a racist point. But we're gonna get to that point now. Take a look at what he had to say about the relationship between Cory Booker and Ketanji Brown Jackson.
But the best was at the end. Don't worry, my sister. Wait a second. They're related? Well, apparently they are, at least in some hard to define spiritual sense. They have definitely seen each other at Whole Foods or on the flight to Edgartown. For decades, these two pioneers have followed virtually identical paths. Both grew up in white collar families, both went to multiple elite schools. Neither one has ever left the tiny world of credential mongering NPR listeners who run this country. Now, it's been a struggle for both of them, but they've made it. At this point, they're just sick and tired of being sick and tired. Cory Booker chokes up thinking about the journey.
Okay, so look, this is following up from some of Tucker Carlson's earlier commentary about both Cory Booker and Ketanji Brown Jackson. He has made multiple big segments on his show, going out to millions of people about how Cory Booker and Ketanji Brown Jackson have only ever gotten anything in their life because they're black. Also, at the same time, they're not really black. Ketanji Brown Jackson is a garden variety white liberal, Tucker Carlson says. And Cory Booker, did you know, has blue eyes. And so how dare they claim this identity? Also, he thinks that the use of the term sister, he says, is some hard to define spiritual sense. And he is very confused, Adrian, by the use of a term like sister. He doesn't understand it. He doesn't get why Cory Booker would say something like that. Can you help us figure out some of this?
Well, I definitely think that we know Tucker Carlson likes to peddle all sorts of racist narratives to further and advance white supremacy. And you know, when you hear Cory Booker talk about essentially having the staff in various places that he's in, where he is generally the only black person, having them thank him and show gratitude and embrace him and make him feel welcomed. That's something that many of us black people know when we are one of the only in that environment. But Tucker Carlson wants to undermine that reality by pretending that just because some black people make it in terms of going to elite schools or getting well-paying jobs or coming from suburban neighborhoods, that means that there's no racism that they face, or even if they happen to have blue eyes. And it's just some of these petty, just really pathetic arguments that further and advance white supremacy, and that are completely and totally palatable and just believable and palpable for his audience. So this is very Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, there's a particular sort of irony about him going on yet another screed this week about how they can't possibly have faced racism, as he goes on an extended racist screed against them. If they're so white, Tucker Carlson wouldn't hate them anymore. They cross over into they're white, they're great people. No, he clearly still despises them, thinks they're still black actually. But like, and of course there's the irony of racists have at all points laid out a million different, ever changing, ever shifting requirements for you to be considered good enough. You have to do all of these things. You have to act certain ways. You have to dress certain ways. You have to talk certain ways. You have to go to certain sorts of schools, have a certain sort of career. You have to do all of these things to have any chance of these racists accepting anyone who isn't white, regardless of what the context is, economic, social, cultural, whatever. But then if you do it, you're white now, but in the bad way, in that we're still gonna say that you got your job due to affirmative action. We're still not gonna accept you, but now how dare you claim that you've ever faced any adversity of any kind? That is just such a sick worldview, such a sick system for Tucker Carlson to knowingly spread. He gets every piece of this puzzle he understands, but his audience, they're not thinking about it as mechanically as he is, and yet they accept it. Like, they want black people, brown people to act a certain way. If you don't, they hate you, they fear you. But if you do, well, then you just, it doesn't count anymore. How dare you claim to have had this life experience at all? What a sick way to think about the world and about other people.
Yep, and a lot of people think that way. Just like even the things I've heard, like, oh, you're the whitest black girl I've ever met. You know, that's just reinforcing the notion that there's only one uniform type of being a black woman. And just all of these things that we hear and experience on a daily basis, yet people say, oh, I'm not racist. I don't have a racist bone in my body. It's like, really? You live and breathe white supremacy and maintain that entire system with how you interact with the world and the benefits that you enjoy as a result of them. And Tucker Carlson's just out here to continue to promulgate that message to his minions who do not have, I would say, the integrity or even the intellectual rigor to really break apart what's being said here, but also to reject it.
Exactly. And by the way, if you need one other piece of evidence that Ketanji Brown Jackson remains black, even in the mind of Tucker Carlson, you need only listen to him talk about her. And I don't mean like make his points, I mean say her name, because you'll note if you listen carefully, he's adding an extra N into her name. And that's just a quick indication that she definitely isn't white, because he goes out of his way to make sure that he never pronounces non-white names correctly, as a very subtle sign of disrespect. And it doesn't matter, by the way, how high profile you are, how long you stay in the news cycle. Kamala Harris is never gonna have her name pronounced correctly on Tucker Carlson. It doesn't matter if she's the VP for 25 years. He is gonna go out of his way to signal to his base, not only are these names ridiculous, and honestly, it's kind of an affront to us that you would have a name like that, but even if it becomes abundantly clear how it's supposed to be pronounced, even if it's not a difficult name to pronounce in the first place, I'm never ever gonna get it right. I'm gonna otherize you in subtle, petty, spiteful ways. She could be on the Supreme Court for the rest of her life, and it's likely that that will happen. Guarantee he will never get her name right. What a childishly racist way to approach such a serious person and a serious thing.
Yep, no matter how hard we work, no matter how much we achieve, we will be undermined, the goalposts will be moved, and we will be disrespected. That is the reality.
Adrian, you're a lawyer.
Yes.
It's not inconceivable that someday you could be nominated for one of these positions. What's he gonna do to your name?
He'll find a way. Even though it's Adrienne, I'm sure I'll say Adrienne. But also just even calling me by my first name if I'm a Supreme Court justice, like calling me or calling Sonia Sotomayor Sonia, as opposed to Justice Sotomayor. Like these things are just little subtle slights, and a lot of them come from Jim Crow, especially when it comes to name usage. And Tucker Carlson has them all in his arsenal, and he's going to use them to maintain his system of oppression. He likes it.
He likes it. Yeah, you'll note that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez remains Sandy to Tucker. It's a term of affection, it's just never used as one. Anyway, there's a lot of dishonesty in what Tucker Carlson has said, but I do want to give him just a brief bit of credit for sort of saying something honest in this clip.
Faker knows a faker. Oh, you're pretending to be someone you're not? Me too.
Yeah, that was honest. I understand that. Look, I'm a fallible person, okay? I'm not a professional. I'm not an Anderson Cooper or whatever. I'm a fallible person. I cannot get past that laugh. Is it intent? Like, there's no way that when he does that, the cameraman doesn't go, ugh. Like, that his producers, that his EP, his wife, his friends, to the extent that he has them, is capable of maintaining a human friendship, haven't said, that's a really weird thing that you do. And it's not, look, I'm not gonna criticize someone's honest laugh because you don't choose how you laugh. I laugh exactly like my dad did. And I remember thinking as a kid that he laughed really weird, but now it's mine. It's just that's what I have. But he's clearly faking it because no other person like goes, and now I'm back to the news. Like you can't cut off in that way. What is going on with him?
I agree.
Let's move to a different set of attacks against the proposed justice with this clip.
Well, KBJ, Ketanji Brown Jackson, is what your country looks like on critical race theory. KBJ is your country on CRT. KBJ, Ketanji Brown Jackson, is an embodiment of the tyranny that we currently live under. She's an ideological, unintelligent, yet confident fanatic who is so dismissive that you might even ask the question of what a woman is. So she wants to be the first ever black woman on the Supreme Court, yet she won't even admit that she's a woman.
Okay, he looks up as if he's confused about the point that he just made, perhaps because it doesn't make any sense. And it's not even reflective of the larger right-wing attack about the definition of womanhood that is being used as a way to continue talking about the nomination process for SCOTUS without ever actually getting into any substance. They're trying to say she won't define womanhood. He has such a shallow level of understanding of politics, even the politics of his side, that he's turned that into she won't admit that she's a woman, which isn't even the claim that the right is making. Along the way, of course, he says that she's unintelligent, which again, isn't even a claim that the right is making, but he saw a picture of her once and he had to assume that I can't live in a world where a woman like that would be more intelligent than me as I bumble my way through another monologue. By the way, did you notice he's attacking her competence and everything? The camera was focused on the backdrop. His face is blurry, which stylistically I prefer, honestly, but dude, focus your camera. You've got a really easy job that's been handed to you by millionaires and billionaires. The least you could do is pretend like you care about it. But anyway, Adrian, Ketanji Brown Jackson, the proposed justice, is what you get when CRT runs America and she's unintelligent and all of that. There'll be more, but what do you think?
Yeah, okay, so first of all, with the camera thing, it's very interesting because given the size of his head, you'd think that the camera operator has a lot to work with. So it's kind of weird to miss the target, but I'll leave that there. As far
honestly, as honestly, I don't think it was a mistake. I think that the camera operator was doing him a bit of a favor, and I appreciate that. We rely on people with technical knowledge. I think it was a stylistic choice by the director of photography. Anyway,
and I kind of think it might have subtly said you're missing the point here, so I'm going to go ahead and I'll be out of focus too. But As far as I'm concerned, again, this is such the narrative that will be pushed. The thought that, oh, she's only getting her position because of affirmative action. She never earned her way to the top. Oh, she is unqualified. Oh, that this is just because of her melanin count and we should question and doubt everything about her. You know, it gets tiring. It is old, this rhetoric. And also, it just really belies the point that there's so many members of white America who are afraid of actual true competition, shall we say, in terms of realizing that you are not above anyone. You are not smarter or better at anything or more intelligent or intellectual or more capable in any ways. Whether it's the Black community, the Latin community, the Asian community or whatnot. The fact is that there are people of all walks of life, regardless of color, who bring a good game. And among them, it's KBJ. So when people just recognize that, guess what? Black women can do things and they are intelligent and many of us are extraordinarily capable, then this world can move forward and actually address the issues we need to address as opposed to playing these silly games and putting all this energy into maintaining white supremacy.
Exactly. Yeah, it's such clear projection about a fear of not being able to make it if there was an actual level playing field, or if there was anything even approaching a level playing field, being unable to make it. And look, I get fear like that. I get white male weakness, but the way that it manifests for me is being afraid of literally everyone, including other white people. That's fair and equitable. You don't target particular groups. Anyway, by the way, another stylistic choice was him going with KBJ. I kind of don't like when people put an acronym on someone that I've never heard use it for themselves. I've never heard her do that. And when they cross her name out and put CRT, it's so utterly dehumanizing, it makes me sick. But as you saw in that video, he also doesn't know how to pronounce her name. So maybe going with the acronym is a better alternative. In any event, he says there, we have another video we're gonna get to, and it's amazing stuff. And again, reveals so much about his worldview. But Adrian, I have a question for you. So he says, and they've all said basically in a variety of ways, she didn't earn this position. She's just being handed it because she's black. What would you have to do to earn this? Like, I honestly don't know. And I assume we can come at it from different directions. We can desire people with experience in different parts of the legal system. There are very different positions that you can hold. But she has done all of the things that they've said for decades you're supposed to do. So Adrian, what could you do to deserve the position?
Oh, you can just drop your melanin count. Like, it seems to be pretty easy. You know, hey, I try every winter when I don't go outside. If, you know, Jackson tried a little harder. The fact is that it'll never be good enough. If anybody wants to really just kind of make it in this world, especially if they're black, particularly if they're a black woman, gonna continually be undermined. This thought that you don't deserve what you have. It's just maintaining this sense of white supremacy, undermining any of our accomplishments, saying, oh, you only got there because of affirmative action. People were checking a box. We need to see your LSAT scores. Oh, I need to ask you about CRT. Things that weren't asked of any other candidate for the nomination. Nobody asked Amy Coney Barrett about her beliefs when it comes to CRT, even though she has black children that she adopted. It just continually shows us that this is the way the system really undermines us to remind us of our place and to stay in our place.
Those are devastating points. Of course, no. And like the fact that we've had to go through all of these different stupid made up controversies about pedophilia, and there was a brief thing on Guantanamo or whatever. Like, they don't care about literally any of this. And partially it's an understanding, I think, that she's almost certainly going to make it on the court, you know, knock on wood and all that. But it's just they're revealing so much. Like, they had an opportunity during this historic nomination. Like, obviously they're not gonna be enthusiastic about it. I get it, they despise black people and they have no interest in them holding positions of authority and power and respect and all that. But they could have gotten through it without making themselves look so blatantly racist. And they have been competing with each other to do it. And it's really, I think it's the intersection of two desires. One is for the movement to ever present sort of like a welcoming posture towards someone who doesn't look exactly like Brett Kavanaugh. And the other is for the media side to attract an audience. And they know their audience. Their audience sees Ketanji Brown Jackson being put up for this position. And they think, you have got to reassure me that I am better than this woman. And so they have been tripping over each other to be the most explicit in reassuring them of that thing. So it's just disgusting along the way. That said, there is a little bit more where he reveals a bit about his fears about the future in this clip.
What do you get when you start to platform and implement critical race theory into every single corner of American society, in your corporations, in your schools? Your children and your grandchildren are going to have to take orders from people like her. And what's amazing is that she kind of has an attitude too. You look carefully at some of those videos, she kind of just, she's like, what? Why are you asking me such a question, Senator? She feels entitled to this position. Why wouldn't she? It's not like she got this position based on her qualifications.
Again, I would love to see him even attempt to explain how her qualifications are insufficient and how he has supported multiple nominees for the court in recent years that have nowhere near the qualifications that she does. But the most amazing takeaway line from that, I think, Adrian, was your kids and your grandkids are going to have to take orders from people like this. And that is the right wing political strategy in one sentence, I think. What did you think about that?
Oh no, it was spot on. It was the thought that now the help is gonna be ordering you around and telling you what to do. That's always been one of the biggest fears when it comes to white America, the thought that if people of color were to have any kind of power and were to advance in any way, that the shoe would be on the other foot. And now possibly they treat you as you treated them. And so that's what he is trying to push here in very subtle regard, but it's the loudest dog whistle I ever heard.
I mean, it's just like everybody has weaknesses, I get it. But like, it's such a weird media thing to create where they have to express all of their fears so blatantly to, again, to reassure their base that has an even worse version of it. Like of course, Charlie Kirk himself is not worried about his kids being ordered around by anyone. He was handed a career by wealthy people. He could fail for the rest of his life. He's gonna end up a multimillionaire. But he knows that there are other people that are worried about it. Racists who look to the future and they see their unearned positions of dominance being finally challenged. And he is gonna make money off of weaponizing that fear, as so many of them do. Anyway, we have to take our first break. When we come back, though, we're gonna be giving you some updates on what's going on in Ukraine, some devastating art, actually. We're gonna go into giving people an idea of some of the experience of some of those fleeing Ukraine, as well as Joe Manchin, AOC taking aim at the senator for good reason. We've got some amazing video for you after this. Anyway, we got important stuff to talk about. And with that, let's jump into this video.
Я хочу зупинитись тут і бути відвертим один раз і назавжди. Ви маєте самі вирішити, за кого ви. Ви суверенна держава. Я був в Будапешті, я обожнюю ваше місто. Я був багато разів. Дуже красиво, дуже дешево, душевно. І такі самі люди. У вас були трагічні моменти в житті. Я був на вашій набережній, я бачив цей меморіал, взуття на річці Дунай, про масові вбивства. Я був своєю сім'єю. Послухай, Вікторе, знаєш, що відбувається в Маріуполі? Будь ласка, якщо зможеш, сходи на свою набережну. Подивись на те взуття. І ти побачиш, як масове вбивство може повторюватись.
So that's obviously fairly devastating from President Zelensky there. If you're listening on our podcast, he's talking, addressing the government leadership of Hungary, talking about historic mass killings and about the fact that they're experiencing in Ukraine every single day very similar things. And in fact, we found out earlier today when the theater was bombed about a week ago, it was something like 1,300 people in it. At least 300 people are feared to have been killed in that bombing. And I will remind you, not only are these all civilians, but Russia, when they did the bombing, they knew that they were. There were large, it was a very identifiable building that was spaced out from other buildings that had signs indicating that this was a place that civilians were sheltering, and more than 300 people killed. That is, like, obviously a lot of people have been killed, and whether it happens in small individual incidents, it's a tragedy anyway. But that One choice, so devastating. Now look, we do have some good news from the point of view of those who absolutely despise this illegal war full of, you know, barbarous war crimes and all that. Ukraine has apparently been successfully pushing back Russian forces in a number of different areas, which is a positive development. They've stymied the Russian advance into a number of different cities. Kyiv was expected that it would be taken relatively quickly. Some cities have been besieged for multiple weeks now. There are areas where they are now successfully pushing back against the Russian forces. Again, bearing in mind that this is coming from Ukraine, which is hardly a completely unbiased source for news. However, this is what they're saying. The Defense Intelligence put out this graphic yesterday, saying that Ukrainian counterattacks and Russian forces are falling back on overextended supply lines. That has been a consistent part of this conflict from the very beginning, allowing Ukraine to reoccupy towns and defensive positions up to 35 kilometers east of the capital in Kyiv. Ukrainian forces are likely to continue to attempt to push Russian forces back along the northwestern axis from Kyiv towards Hostomel airfield. And so all of this is good. In fact, the army put out a statement. The town of Makarov, west of Kyiv, was back under Ukrainian control, saying they had successfully raised the flag again. It's part of the fiercely contested suburban areas around Kyiv, where Russia made large early advances, but then started to suffer problems. And again, suffered those problems. If they were to get into these massive cities, it is expected that that would be its own devastating situation for Russia to take and then hold. So it is good to see some success in helping to reestablish control. That does not mean that Ukraine is all of a sudden winning this war or anything approaching that. But Adrian, I'm curious what you think about what you've been seeing coming out of Ukraine over the past few days.
You know, I continue to realize how strong the Ukrainian people are as they fight, and they do so with such pride and determination. And it's something that they should never have had to be pushed to the point of, but still, you know, seeing how resolute they are, it definitely is inspiring. At the same time, seeing Putin and the Russian forces continue to lie and also to target civilians and to target areas that they know where there are civilians, it really tells you how depraved he is, and also how much he doesn't care about the loss of life or in life at all. And also, it just really is so incredibly disheartening to know that this individual will likely do whatever they feel that they want or need to do in order to essentially have this level of domination that he demands and likely will die fighting for.
Yeah, that's really the fear is, the situation is not going anywhere near where they hoped that it would. And the US is saying that they have a lot of intelligence about expectations that Kyiv would fall in a matter of days. And it seems plausible as a non-expert on the region or on Russian military or anything like that. It felt like it could fall in days. We'd talked to journalists who believed that that was a possibility. And so it hasn't worked, obviously. That has not come true. The question is, If it continues on in a non-productive quagmire with rising civilian deaths on the Ukrainian side, more and more deaths military on the Russian side, that could in theory be seen as a bad domestic situation from Putin's point of view. But how much will he care? How much accurate information will get through to the Russian people? And how much avenue is there remaining for popular discontent, were it to grow with the war, to have an effect on him politically? Like you stated that he doesn't care. I don't believe that he cares. And if you don't already believe that, if you find it hard to believe that a leader wouldn't care about the deaths of their soldiers, like how much do you think American presidents really cared about the quagmire in Iraq and Afghanistan? Like how many extra US soldiers died? How many nights of sleep do you think that our political leaders actually lost? And now we're talking about Putin. Probably, if there is compassion to be stripped away from a politician, I think he has done that through the course of his career. So I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see the level of support internationally, both in terms of equipment supplies, as well as I just think moral support, I think has been very important. There's detractors, certainly. Marjorie Greene has been encouraging Ukraine to surrender for a couple of weeks now. I just saw on Sean Hannity's program, Tulsi Gabbard was saying they should surrender. They have no chance. Why bother? Which is a position you can take, but I don't see how that leads to a better outcome militarily or politically for Ukraine. What do you think?
No, I don't. And also too, why would I want to be dominated, controlled, taken over, and likely kind of obliterated in what almost seems to be some genocidal campaign by Putin? Why would I want to have that? It's a matter of life and death for me, where I don't want to live under this person's regime. So no, there's no other option but to fight till the death. Let's do it. And so, you know, this thought that you have these Americans over here, Marjorie Taylor Greene and the others, saying, oh, just surrender. Get out of here. It just really shows you their mentality and how weak they are. But not everybody's like that. Some people actually stand for something and are willing to die for it. And I respect that, as opposed to Marjorie Taylor Greene's nonsense.
100%. I'm gonna take your side on that one. But let's turn to something very different. There's been an amazing social media campaign from the very beginning in this invasion, where we have gotten a lot of access to information about what's happening there. Incredibly granular information about the attacks, the experience of the lives of those who are engaged in the struggle, both on the military side and the civilian side. And while some of that information might not be making it to Russia, where it perhaps most importantly needs to go, we get a window into this tragedy. And here is a very particular one. So kids who have been involved in like fleeing refugees during the situation are making art to give people an idea of their experience. In particular, Artem and Anastasia Bykovets, they fled Kyiv when Russian troops invaded about a month ago. It took a couple days to get to the west of the country. Bear in mind, millions of people have fled, both outside of Ukraine, but also from one portion of Ukraine to another. So they encouraged their 6-year-old daughter to draw what she was thinking about the conflict. And they've created this Instagram account, uakids.today, to show some of this art. And now, look, obviously, if you want to classify this as propaganda, you are hardly incorrect in that. It can certainly be used for that purpose. But I have been trying to imagine what the experience of these refugees must be like. And something like half of the refugees are children. Here is sort of how they're processing this. If we can put up some of this art, you'll see basically artistic depictions of individual soldiers, just text messages expressing their thoughts, planes attacking ships, soldiers fighting back, tanks fighting tanks. And you can see this, like some of the art gets to the point where I think these are slightly older kids, 11 and stuff like that. You can see that bottom left one. That's probably better than I could even do. But yeah, people are talking about art therapy in the chat right now. I'm sure it's serving that purpose as well. Adrian, what do you think about this?
You know, it's eye opening and it's devastating at the same time. The thought that these children should be drawing rainbows and sunshine, and yet they are drawing war, and how much this is going to impact and shape their entire lives. And I have friends who grew up in conflict territories, and the 4th of July, they can't hang. It's not going well. Large or loud sounds, balloons bursting, it scares them. It reminds them of times when they were in the midst of war as children. And just thinking about how this is impacting those kids' lives. That's, you know, the art, I think that's beautiful. At the same time, God, it really sucks.
Yeah, it really does. And obviously, they're going to need help from a lot of different countries to help either temporarily or permanently resettle a number of these people. Something like 3.3 million refugees that have already moved into EU countries. And like we announced, Biden announced earlier this week, they're going to allow 100,000 refugees in, which is far more generous than our country has been when it comes to refugees for well over a decade at this point. Shockingly, it's this conflict where we're being, you know, a little bit welcoming. That's 100,000. That is tiny little fraction, by the way. And a lot of, especially these kids, are going to experience trauma potentially for the rest of their life. You're totally right about when I was a kid, I was drawing dinosaurs and superheroes that I made up. It was all fictional because it got to be. Because we didn't experience war in that way. Even the wars that happened while I was a kid, Desert Storm and stuff like that, thousands of miles away, we're inoculated from the effects of the horror that our country is unleashing. They're experiencing it every day. Okay, let's move on to something very different. I've been looking forward to this one. Let's lay into Joe Manchin with this video.
But you have someone like Joe Manchin, or you know, anybody else, that sees the attack on voting rights that's happening in our country, that sees our constitutionally enshrined right to vote and sees it getting chipped away, and just sitting on it.
And Joe Manchin, who AOC is talking about right there, certainly is sitting not only on the federal government doing something about the attacks on voting rights, but on many, many other issues. And generally, the way that this goes and the way that he's able to continue to do that is a senator or two, a couple politicians can entirely grind all of the hopes and dreams and aspirations of an entire party and the millions of voters who they made promises to a halt. And you are not supposed to criticize them. You're certainly not supposed to name their names. You're definitely not supposed to indicate that they might be doing it because their donors like when nothing happens. And that still largely is what we're seeing. Joe Manchin does not get criticized individually by a lot of politicians, but thankfully Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez feels free to attack him, and she does at great length. We're gonna give you a little bit more of that.
This is where I'm going to personally complain. If I went on television and provided an argument with that many holes in it, I would be pilloried. You know, I would be, it would be like front page, like the pressure from media, the headlines, the embarrassment. It would have been next level. But he gets to go on, and whether it's voting rights or whether it's BBB, and our babies are sleeping in bubble jackets in NYCHA with no heat and no boilers because of that. So I'm mad. I'm mad. Now I'm giving you a little peek behind the closed doors here. But it's this idea of if we coddle someone's ego, that they're gonna, you know, they're gonna say yes. And if it hasn't worked in 2 years, why are we gonna continue doing that when there's an election this November?
So there, she's not only criticizing Joe Manchin for leaving, as she points out, kids sleeping in bubble jackets because he doesn't give a damn about actually doing anything. But she's also criticizing all the people that protect him. She's criticizing Joe Biden. She's criticizing Democratic leadership, who is just thinks maybe if we have one more lunch, Adrian, with Joe Manchin, then he'll start being reasonable and he'll feel some sort of ethical responsibility to actually represent his constituents. Maybe it'll work. One more lunch. Maybe we'll go somewhere nice, like a Brazilian steakhouse or something. If we woo him in a particular way, then surely he'll begin to be reasonable.
You know, Brazilian steakhouse, I think that'd be good, but I think he's more of an Applebee's guy. But the thing is, it's like there's nothing we're gonna do. This man, he likes his money. Let's just give him his money or whatever's gonna keep him in a position of power. You know, but he really shouldn't be in this position at all. He does not care about his constituents. You know, he says these completely demeaning things that do not help and uplift his community, and they have so many incredible needs. Like, I remember finding out what that a lot of what West Virginians had the highest level of like missing teeth of people in the nation. Yep. Yeah, and it's like, yet you won't help them. You won't do anything. And just the fact that he is undermining voting rights bills, that says it all too, because he wants to stay in his position of power.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not supposed to criticize him. We're not supposed to challenge him on his donors. And he's doing all this to stop Biden's agenda. And as she points out, Joe Manchin will go on TV and be like, no, I'm just worried about the deficit.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what it is. First of all, that's an insane thing to say when the plans that have been put forward raise a ton of extra revenue to make sure that all of these problems being solved causes as small of possible as a rise to the deficit. The idea that like he knows exactly what his party won back control of the White House, the Senate, and the House to do. He knows exactly what people want. But he might be open to some sort of deal. That's what we're hearing once again. It's never been true, but I read in Axios that he told a group of climate activists and energy executives, I'm sure he likes them both equally, that he's open to supporting a revised Build Back Better legislation, narrowly addressing three issues: climate change, prescription drug prices, and deficit reduction, of course. He says he's got a deal, $500 billion for climate, $1 trillion in new revenue. There's no support for universal preschool or any of the other care economy proposals that were included in Biden's initial plan. So still massive FU to Joe Biden for all the promises he made. But he wants to reduce the deficit with at least half of the revenue that new corporate taxes would bring in. And so his communications director says he remains seriously concerned about the financial status of our country. and believes fighting inflation by restoring fairness to our tax system and paying down our national debt must be our first priority. I agree. I actually want our national debt to get down to zero just in time for the planet to burst into flames. I think it would be nice to go out without any debt. But anyway, Adrian, are you buying it? You think
no.
I'm gonna do this deal? What if he does this deal? You think cinema's gonna go along with it?
Oh yeah, definitely. No. I just, you know, the fact that these people keep kind of dragging us along, like who believes them anymore? No, the thing that also got me is this week hearing Manchin talk about that he will be voting yes for Ketanji Brown Jackson. That feels good, but at the same time, I realize it's like, I can't trust you. I don't know if all of a sudden you're gonna say, I had a change of heart. Like, get out of here.
Also, you're gonna support the eminently qualified nominee of your own party? Would you like a cookie? Like, or is he not merciful? But no. Look, I think it's important that we pass this infrastructure bill. So if you'll forgive me for a sec, I see Joe Manchin's holding a football. I'm gonna go try to kick it. I'll be right back. So it's not gonna happen. And I wanna be wrong. And if I'm wrong, everyone in the chat can laugh at me. I'll even take part. I'll pretend that I'm Ted Cruz and I've got a humiliation kink. You can all make fun of me as much as you want. Ain't gonna happen. Anyway, with that said, we got a lot more to get to. We do have to take a break first, so. We're gonna go for just a minute. When we come back, lots more to talk about. Okay, and now we get into fun territory. Let's jump into this video.
Do not concede, she wrote. It takes time for the army who is gathering for his back. Thomas urged Meadows to help the president stand firm. The majority knows Biden and the left is attempting the greatest heist of our history. The messages don't directly reference Justice Thomas or the Supreme Court, but show how Ginny Thomas sought to guide the president's strategy to overturn the election, urging Meadows to make Trump's controversial attorney, Sidney Powell, the lead in the face. On November 24th, Meadows wrote Thomas, quote, "This is a fight of good versus evil." Thomas replied, "Thank you, needed that. This plus a conversation with my best friend just now." It is unclear who Ginny Thomas was referring to. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas often refers to his wife this way.
I love being here with my bride, Virginia, who's a gift from God and my totally best friend in the whole world.
I think they might be onto something. I think Virginia Ginny Thomas might have been talking about her husband, Clarence Thomas, there in one of the many text messages that she sent to people in the immediate orbit of Donald Trump about how he can succeed in ending American democracy and overthrowing the results of the 2020 election. The wife of one of the longest standing Supreme Court justices, not only believing in every random conspiracy theory about the election that she happened to come across on 4chan or whatever, but actively communicating and getting into a conversation back and forth with incredibly powerful Republicans about it. Now, the text messages that were alluded to there were among the 2,320 that Mark Meadows provided the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack. The content of the messages between Thomas and Meadows, 21 sent by her, 8 by him, which if you were Ginny Thomas, you would realize is not a great ratio. But anyway, has not previously been reported. But there were these 29 messages, which Ellie Mistel, friend of the show, responded with this on Twitter. 29. Anyway, if you could bring that up. But anyway, I want you to imagine if we're talking about the SCOTUS, imagine if it turned out that Ketanji Brown Jackson had been like sending direct text messages about conspiracy theories during this or whatever, that the world would end. But anyway, Mark Meadows' lawyer says that these messages do exist, but they did not raise legal issues. Adrian, I think they raise very specifically legal issues because she is the wife of Clarence Thomas. We are continually told that thinking that she might have been talking with him, that might be affecting him, is insane. What do you think about it?
Oh, I definitely think that there is an issue here. And also, I want to know to what extent was she, could you say, a participant in this insurrection in terms of advocating, pushing, moving it forward? Because even pushing this big lie all the way up to the Supreme Court, mind you, where Meadows filed a supplemental brief in favor of it. And I believe they petitioned to Clarence Thomas for review specifically. You can't tell me that that's not going to affect you when your spouse is clearly out here in cahoots with everyone else. And the thing that also really gets me, and I've actually done this kind of little twisted analysis in my head, is she can't necessarily be forced to disclose things she said about her husband because of marital privilege. And so having that go like in loop, so to speak, in terms of they're not necessarily gonna be forced to testify against each other and whatnot, it just makes me realize how incestuous and corrupt our government is, and that we really cannot trust it in any form or fashion.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I'm glad that you pointed that out. That is definitely true. What if they associate more as best friends? Does that potentially get around that issue of the marital exemption? Probably not.
No, probably not.
But anyway, look, she says in the message, I'm going to go talk to my best friend. Unless during the pandemic she got a new hobby and got a new best friend from that, I'm going to need to see some receipts on that. I'm going to assume that it's Clarence Thomas. And I know you in the audience are thinking, I've listened to him not speak. I've seen the look on his face. How could he be anyone's best friend? But marriages are weird things, and it's not on me to judge. What I will say, though, is that while she is the very vocal one about these conspiracy theories and the big lie, and we'll get into some of the examples, let's not forget that the court allowed for, or basically blocked Trump's bid to stop certain documents from going to the January 6th commission. Overwhelmingly, they stopped Trump from blocking it. It was an 8-1 vote. Clarence Thomas, knowing that he was going to be overruled, still tried to stop those documents from being handed over to the January 6th commission. Is that disconnected? Is that not the result of a conversation? Maybe he just genuinely also wants to cover up what happened around January 6th. Or maybe his best friend did actually get in his ear. I will say this, I can't prove anything yet. It's certainly something that should be looked into, but you are not crazy if you are worried about the connection here.
Nope, I don't think you're crazy at all. And also, you know what, anybody with any semblance of decency would go ahead and just resign from their post on the Supreme Court, but decency hasn't been something we've seen in a long time. There is no sense of shame going on in Washington, no matter what direction you look in. And so we just know that what Clarence Thomas just got out of the hospital the other day after a week-long stay with flu-like symptoms, you know, the first thing he should be doing is writing a resignation letter to Chief Justice Roberts. But unfortunately, I'm sure he is going to go back to work with his chin held high, feeling perfectly fine, and act like, nope, nothing to see here. He has some kind of audacity. We've already seen that on full display, and now it's to our detriment as a nation.
Yeah, wild. 100%. It's also, it's convenient, by the way, that I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying it's convenient that he, while all of this is going on, he's in the hospital with flu-like symptoms while she's out in the public with QAnon-like symptoms. So it's weird that he didn't have to comment on any of that. And I'm sure that he won't. But yeah, like I think it was Senator Wyden is now calling on him to recuse himself on any cases having to do with January 6th. Recuse himself? No, he should have already been recusing himself. Mm-hmm. He has proven that he is not unbiased. Get him the hell out of there. And just out of curiosity, like he's been on the court since what, like 92, 93? It's been a very long time. How long do we expect? Is his one of the names that's going around as maybe at some point it gets to retirement talk? What do you think about that?
Oh, it would be nice, you know, but you know, I couldn't see him necessarily retiring unless, you know, hey, maybe there's some corrupt job waiting for him on the outside that's going to be set up, you know, kind of maybe, or something set up like a la Kennedy. But the thing is that, you know, right now when you have Democrats holding a court, it's not going to happen, I don't think, because I really do think that Clarence Thomas believes so much in his Republican conservative right wing angle that he will not get off that bench, especially when a Democrat is in control, unless, you know, he's carried out in a body bag.
I think you're 100% right. And I love that the very opportunistic claims of judicial activism that go around, never towards the right, they don't care, they like that. Like the biggest case of judicial activism is very carefully choosing when you retire or not. But they don't have a problem with that. They're perfectly fine with that. What does that have to do with your legal like ideology or like your legal theory? Like that isn't anything. It's just to produce a political outcome. Anyway, Thomas, like if you want to see more of the specifics of her text messages, they are out there. They're very worrying stuff. She talks about at one point, I'm gonna jump ahead a little bit. Biden crime family and ballot fraud co-conspirators are being arrested and detained for ballot fraud right now and over coming days, and will be living in barges off Gitmo to face military tribunals for sedition. That's insane stuff. Like that's not just like Thomas needs to have a talk with Ginny because she's trying to overthrow the government. He should be checking in on her because she's not well. Like, if you believe not just that he should be arrested, but that he is being arrested, you have no attachment to reality anymore. And that should be something that any best friend should be worried about. In any event, we are right up against the end of our hour. Thank you for everyone listening on the podcast or linear platforms. Love you. If you're on Twitch, YouTube, members stuff, all that, we got a lot more. So don't go anywhere. Adrian and I will be back in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.